Hope you can come back to the lesson now. We were discussing Kayagata Sati Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya. A very relevant sutta for mostly for the, we can say, for the beginners as well as for the experienced yogis, because it is giving us a lot of information related to many topics related to our meditation, our practice. So in this Kayagata Sati Sutta, we discuss about Anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing, and then the four postures, that is Iriyapata Bhavanava, how to use various postures to develop mindfulness, and then clear comprehension, including various sub-postures and daily activities, how to develop mindfulness using those daily activities. And then we get on to various body parts. So what are the body parts making this so-called body, so-called man, so-called woman? So we discuss that. So it has given a different perspective to our practice, because when we think there is a person here, there is an I, there is you, there is a man, there is a woman, there is mother, there is father, there is child. So this is actually, we are working on the conventional level, but when we look at our body, it consists of various body parts, and if we are able to time look at it in that way, then it gives a kind of an insight for us to think, for us to ponder, is there a really person, is there a really I, is there a really beautiful body here, or is it a collection of many bodily parts? So it has given another perspective about our life. And then we discuss about various elements, particularly the four elements. What are the four elements making this so-called body, and how to recognize each and every element, and that we have discussed. And then last week actually we discussed about nine channel round contemplations, sometimes we call as Navasivatika Bhavana. So basically, what will happen to this body after it passed away, after it died? So how a corpse may go through various stages of decay. So that was discussed during last time. And that is also a very insightful practice, because when we think this body is really important, so this body is very important and it is very beautiful and say very strong, so we might get conceited. But on the other hand, when we understand it has the same kind of a destiny, it has to go through some certain stages, unavoidable stages after the death, and once we understand that side, so we come back to the ground, so we become very humble, so we become more humility. So made with a lot of humility, so that we can live with others harmoniously, and a lot of conceit is removed, and we become really a simple, good human beings. So that is another way of looking at our life. And now Buddha is taking us to another topic, that is the number 7, that is related to jhana, that is the absorptions. So we'll discuss about absorptions today. So in the absorptions, so basically the idea is, so we are keeping one important or one wholesome object as our meditation object, and again we are applying our mind, applying our attention to that. So this actually helps us to stop various other distractions. Say for example, at the beginning you are using breath, say for example. So we start from very simple way, just to maintain our attention at in-breath and then out-breath, again on in-breath, again on out-breath. So likewise, we start it in a very simple way, but we improve that. So we are aware at this moment, at this given moment, this is the in-breath. at this given moment, this is the out-breath. So likewise, again and again, we are applying our mind again and again to this breath at this present moment, and that helps us to develop mindfulness. And as we progress, we even develop fair amount of clear comprehension. We can understand it is not the out-breath, this is the in-breath. In-breath is different from out-breath. Out-breath is different from in-breath. So we can clearly recognize. And sometimes we understand, okay, in-breath is longer, out-breath is shorter, or in-breath is longer, out-breath is shorter, or in-breath comes in one nostril, out-breath going in another nostril, in-breath is cooler, out-breath is warmer. So likewise, various subtle differences we can recognize. So we are refining our mindfulness and we are improving clear comprehension, sampajanya. And then even we recognize certain differences between two consecutive in-breaths, two consecutive out-breaths. Even though it appears like very similar, when our clear comprehension improves, we may be able to recognize very subtle differences between two consecutive in-breaths or two consecutive out-breaths. That indicates that our attention is moving forward very finer detail, very minute details, so that our mindfulness is well refined, our attention is very precisely aimed, and clear comprehension is improved, and we are utterly in the present moment. And when we are reaching these kind of stages, for certain yogis, there's a possibility of the arising of a kind of a nimitta, kind of a sign. For some yogis, it may be a little light, kind of a illumination, or kind of a cloud, kind of a cotton wool. So different way for different yogis. But for certain others, such nimitta, such sign never appear. It also doesn't matter. But the point here is, if we pay more attention towards the detail, then it is less possibility of arising this nimitta, because we are more bent towards the vipassana approach. But on the other hand, if we are not paying much attention to the details, rather we simply use breath to improve our concentration, our samadhi, one-pointedness of the mind, so that may lead to arising this nimitta, this sign. So once this nimitta arises, sometimes we call as anapanasati nimitta, the sign of anapanasati. So at the beginning it might not be very beautiful or luminous, but as we improve our practice, more we keep our attention on the breath, so it can further improve this nimitta, this sign, and it may appear very beautiful, very attractive, or even very bright. Even at that time, we should not immediately look at it, but rather we have to carefully note our breath, very carefully, in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath, and that further contributes towards the improvement or the increase of this nimitta sign, and then it becomes very stable. At the beginning, if we look at it, it will simply disappear. But if we continue our practice as usual, then this nimitta become more and more stable. Now it appear very bright in front of your eyes, and very much like the breath emerging from this nimitta, and breath go into this nimitta. So very much like breath and the sign, breath and the, say, the light is very much merged together. So it is automatically we tend to look at it. So it's just a beautiful light, maybe a kind of a bright light or kind of a soft light. It can vary time to time. And we are simply looking at it. Now we ignore breath, but simply look at this nimitta. So it appears very pleasant, and we only take the pleasant side here. Now we are entirely on a samatha approach. So we are not talking, we are not thinking about the differences or the changes or the impermanence of this nimitta. Rather, we consider the positive aspects. We consider it is very beautiful, very good, very pleasant, and it is happy, and again it is permanent. So we are taking a kind of a different approach in this samatha practice. So we now dealing with the nimitta, dealing with this counterpart sign. Now it become more and more brighter, more and more vivid, and we are living with it very much like, and we have to properly balance our faculties. So we have to have a lot of faith on this, and we are maintaining only the necessary amount of effort, not using much effort, and allowing the mind to well concentrate onto this nimitta, and again not looking at any defects in this nimitta, rather taking it as very positive, very beautiful, very attractive, like that we are sort of taking the positive aspect of it, and very pleasantly we are looking at it. So if we are able to maintain this kind of an attitude in our mind, it is very relaxed attitude, very pleasant attitude, and we have a very positive attitude because of the faith, and very feeling at ease. At one given moment, so we may get absorbed to it. We very much like we immerse to it. We soaked in it. So this can happen. But if you expect it too hard, then it may not happen. Because in order to immerse to it, in order to soak into it, so you need to have a very pleasant, very lighter kind of a mind. So that attitude has to be maintained for a while. And you are simply looking at the nimitta and carefully observing it, and then you get absorbed it. You become one with it. Now the whole world disappears, and you are simply with this nimitta, with this sign, and it's very pleasant experience, very blissful experience. So now when we consider the first jhana, so there are five factors define the first jhana. So we sometimes call them as jhana factors. Dhyana Anga, Dhyana factors. So at the beginning, our mind still might try to jump out of this nimitta. So there's a little disturbance still might happen. But again and again, we apply mind again and again back to the nimitta, again and again back to this counterpart sign. Very much like it's trying to going out, we are again putting it back. Again trying to going out, again we are putting it back. But later, we don't need to forcefully do it, but the mind itself does it. We don't need to intervene. We can simply observe it, but mind itself does this task. Whenever mind tries to shift out of the sign, so mind itself is putting it back, putting it back. So we have this applied mind, again and again applying the mind towards the nimitta. So therefore, the first jhana factor, vitakka, is there, present. And while being with the nimitta, we observe it. We carefully being with it. So our mind, very much like touching it very gently, softly. The nimitta and the mind is fairly become one with it, and it is very much like rubbing the nimitta. So this is called vichara, the sustained attention. So we are keeping a sustained attention towards the nimitta, towards this light or towards whatever the sign. And then there is no friction, there is no any kind of effort. Simply we have one, we became one with it. And so therefore kind of a very blissful feeling can arise. And therefore it's very happy. So the happiness and the rapture are present. You might feel like goosebumps are coming and going, and you might feel like sometimes somewhat soaked on a kind of a very cool water like, and the whole body appear or whole body feeling that kind of a pleasure, kind of a rapture. And it's very pleasant, very blissful experience, and the whole body, whole yourself is felt with that. Whole the body pervaded with such a rapture, such a happiness. And very comfortable. And therefore the rapture, the piti is also there. That is the third jhana factor, and again kind of a satisfaction, kind of a happiness, comfort is also there. So that is the fourth jhana factor, sukha. And again, mind is not distracted. Mind doesn't go towards the past nor to the future, but simply being with this nimitta, with this counterpart sign. So therefore the ekaggata, one-pointedness or unity of the mind is there. So these jhana factors are present in the first jhana. So based on these jhana factors, actually we define which jhana we are in. So in the first jhana, there are five jhana factors, and we are therefore observing this nimitta, and we get absorbed to it, and these jhana factors are present. And this actually can happen only when hindrances are faded away. You can't have it while there's a lust in your mind. You can't have it while anger is present in your mind. And again, if you have any kind of a doubt, you can't have it. Any kind of, while having any kind of a regret, you can't have it. Any kind of restlessness, you can't have. And again, when this all the positive aspects are available, if you fall asleep, again you are defeated. So basically you have to have an awakened mind in order to be with this nimitta, absorb to this nimitta. Therefore the thina middha, sloth and torpor, also has to be disappeared, and that basically means all the hindrances are temporarily subsided. Then only you are able to merge with this situation. So now you are in a very blissful situation, and it's a very pleasant abiding, and therefore this is, in a way, this is one of the beautiful experience a yogi can have. And Buddha is giving a very beautiful simile here, the kind of an experience that the yogi have. So you know, during the good old days there are no soap. So unlike today, there are many different brand names of soap. But during the Buddha's time, only kind of a, what is called bath powder was available. And to that bath powder, you take a small amount and you mix with water. And when you are mixing with water, that bath powder become a one lump, kind of a one ball. And in order to do that, you have to evenly sprinkle water so that each and every powder, each and every particle get wet by the water. And that's how the whole powder become one ball. So you can understand, each and every particle is now bound together because of the water. So this ball has is now as a, appear like a single thing, and now you can apply it throughout the body. Now it appear like a one thing. Now Buddha is giving this simile. So what he says is, so it basically squeezes and soak together, bound together because of the water. So there is no any particle loosest, any particle going out, because it's everything bound together. Everything due to this moisture, everything bound. So similarly Buddha says, now this happiness, this pleasure, this feeling of the unity of mind is felt to the whole body. So the yogi feels this very pleasant abiding through the body. Now he has become one with this sign, one with this counterpart sign, one with this anapanasati nimitta. So this is called the absorption, the first jhana, where the five jhana factors are present, and the whole body is feeling very blissful. The whole mind and body felt very blissful. And the whole pressure may be even sort of pervaded throughout the body, and it can actually happen in different stages. Sometimes, time to time, the happiness or the pressure can appear, or sometimes like a electric shock, kind of a very blissful experience can happen time to time. Or sometimes very much like you feel floating, very lighter kind of an experience can happen, or goosebumps can appear, or like waves coming and bathing you and then going, again another wave coming and bathing you, pervading you and then going, that kind of an experience can happen. So different experiences can happen. So it may vary time to time, from person to person, from occasion to occasion. Therefore, the rupture has different stages. And anyway, rupture is also present and the whole experience is very comfortable, very happy. And the mind is united with this nimitta. So all these factors are there. So you can understand this is one of the temporary blissful experience that one can have because of this meditation. And in a way, for a yogi, this is also a very beautiful experience. So sometimes at the beginning, the whole meditation appear like very difficult. Minds constantly go out and you have to struggle hard to bring it back. But later, when the mind is well tamed, the experience become very blissful, experience become very comfortable. And this jhana is one of the most prominent experience one can have. And it may even change your life because you will understand more very prominently that there's an entirely different domain is available for you to be happy. It is not a happiness that you gain by looking at various sights. It is not some kind of a happiness that you gain by listening to various music. It is not kind of a happiness that you gain by using various, say, smells, odors, or even by tasting various delicious food, or even by having comfortable tactile sensations, or not even by thinking. You are not sort of going to a kind of an obsession to have this kind of a feeling. Rather, the mind has to be very calm, very tranquil, no inner chatter. Then only you can have this kind of an experience. So therefore, you will experience an entirely different paradigm because of this jhana. And you have to have a fair amount of letting go, particularly when you get absorbed to that nimitta. Otherwise, if you are maintaining a lot of ego, then you might get even frightened when you get absorbed. But again and again, when you practice it, so you can give up yourself and simply allow the mindfulness and the concentration to operate, and you get absorbed to it and you are simply there. You just be there, simply experiencing the bliss. So this kind of very beautiful milestones are there in the practice. But anyway, Buddha says this has, of course, very comfortable, very happy, temporary feeling, blissful state. But even though if you spend hours or days, there is no cutting off of defilements. So that is the disadvantage. So one can be very attracted towards this kind of a blissful state. But main warning is that we should not get addicted to it. And on the other hand, even though we may spend hours there is no cutting off of defilements. So it is very clearly mentioned in Salleka Sutta, available in Majjhima Nikaya, that Buddha says all these jhanas, not only the rupa jhana, even the arupa jhana, are simply pleasant abiding, pleasant dwelling places for the mind, but there is no any cutting off of defilements. So the cutting off of defilements can only happen through vipassana meditation, insight practice. So that is another point that we need to understand. But anyway, so this kind of experience is really a kind of a encouragement for the yogis to search our inner happiness, not depending on so much about the outside happiness. Rather, the happiness is available within. So it is with you. You don't need to going after another person to be happy. There is a lot of happiness available within ourselves. So it's a matter of refining our faculties, attuning our faculties, so that we are able to get absorbed to this kind of a state and then we can enjoy this kind of a blissful state. So since this is discussed with respect to the body, Buddha says if one is experiencing this first jhana again and again, so the mind tends to be with the body. So this is another advantage actually we can get from this samatha practice, Buddha says. So this is all the typical mundane sense related thoughts may disappear, because you are introduced for a new domain, new paradigm towards the happiness, and therefore your mind tends to stay with the body, just concentrated with the body, joined with the body, united with the body, concentrated with the body. So this is the main advantage. So all the typical sensual pleasure related thoughts are disappeared, and you are fairly connected now with the body. So that is the advantage of this kind of a practice. So this is the short information about the first jhana. And so if you are having some time, say you are not in your old age for you to play with this kind of a state, but you are in a young age, say 25 years, 30 years, 35 years, still you have some time to enjoy these kind of blissful states. But I don't encourage very old people to spend a lot of time on this kind of states, because it may take a lot of time to practice this. But spending fair amount of time to develop wisdom in the vipassana side is more preferred, more advantageous, more beneficial. So that is another note. And with that, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. And I open the session for questions.
Avsar Pandey, there are currently six questions.
Yeah.
Question number one, mindful sitting. Venerable Pandey, during my sitting meditation, I watch the breath till it calms down. And after a while, I can feel rapture. Sometimes a wave or goosebumps-like feeling. When this happens, I watch each sensation. My question is, how do I proceed to calm it down? Much merits for your guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, I mean, it may happen naturally. You don't need to forcefully calm them down. Rather, more you watch it carefully, more you equanimously watch it, so the calming down is the natural effect. So they may get agitated if our mind is also agitated. But rather, we have an open attitude. We embrace them, we acknowledge them. And whatever arises, we are looking at them. We are learning from them. So they are the sort of teacher for us at that time. So each and every one is popping up for us to teach something, to make us kind of a wise person. So we are taking the advantage of that appearance of whatever this sensation, and we are taking it for our improvement. And more they appear, we take it positively. So we don't need to immediately try to calm them down or make them to disappear. So that is also a wrong attitude, because we are sort of having kind of a resistance towards the arising of these various phenomena. But on the other hand, if we have a quite open attitude, we simply allow them to come, allow them to be, and allow them to go. So they are not mine. They are not bothering me. But they are coming by themselves due to various causes and conditions. And I am there to watch it and allow them to be there. And when they are going, I have no resistance towards that either. I allow them to go. So when we have that kind of an open attitude, simply they go away, fade away very quickly. So therefore, don't try to suppress them, don't try to kick them out. Rather, simply be with them, allow them to come, allow them to be, and then they will naturally disappear. Yeah.
Question number two of six is a general question. Dear Bhante, thank you for your great explanations on different practices related to body contemplation, the last Dhamma talk under Kayagata Sati Sutta. I understand that the decaying body phases in the carnal ground and asubha can be very effective in some scenarios, as explained by Bhante, especially to reduce excessive lust, recognize the reality, and make us humble. When I tried these contemplations, my first observation was the uneasiness and disliking of the mental pictures of decaying body. I felt fear, nausea, and choking in a mild manner. I could feel increasing breathing and sweating sensations. As per Bhante's advice, I recognized that these are signs of mindfulness, and my focus was on the body, so I was not completely distracted to stop the meditation. After several attempts, I still get the uneasiness and nausea kind of feeling, and started observing how these feelings arise and dominate in mind and overall state of mind. Is this the method I should practice, or put more effort to go to the main object of contemplation? With metta, that's the end.
Yeah, I think based on the situation, you have to use them. It is not necessary to forcefully make the mind say contemplate about these charnel ground meditations, because as you have mentioned, it can lead to kind of a depression in the mind, like I have warned you on the other day. So if your mind is in a very pleasant but not with lust but very equanimous state, so it is not essential to practice this kind of a meditation object, because already the mind is equanimous, already the mind is clear, there is no lust at all, then not necessary. It's very much like a medicine. So if you have fever only, you have to take paracetamol. If you don't have, you don't need to take. Simple as that. So likewise, so if there is a remaining lust, burning lust is there, maybe channel ground meditation would be a very good medicine for you to come back to the real terms. But if there is no such lust present in the moment, at the moment, and you can get into the proper practice, maybe anapanasati or whatever it is, then well and good, you can directly put your attention to anapanasati. But if there is prevailing lust, then you can try this channel ground meditation, fine. And as you said, immediately our lust may disappear. And once lust disappear, you also have to stop the medicine as well, because the illness is cured now. So you don't need to continue the medicine. And at the moment, okay, mind has come back to the real terms, the normal terms. And it is now equanimous. And now you can get into the typical practice. And that's why, I mean, we need to know the dose. We need to know the amount, how much we need to practice this kind of a very effective type of practice, because these are very strong medicines. Not like paracetamol, but like more strong medicine. So therefore, don't take them without a prescription. So therefore, you have to take them only when it is necessary. Not necessary to practice every day, or not necessary to practice as a typical, usual practice, but only when you feel that you need a strong dose, you need a little injection, then you can try that.
Question number 3 of 6. Mindful walking. Venerable Sir, my walking practice has been going quite well during the past few months, and I settled to a routine of approximately 45 minutes of walking before every sitting. I have shared my experience 2 times, and you advised to continue practicing, and the technique and the progress was positive. Due to some sudden changes in my office work, my days got really busy during the last few weeks, and I was struggling to find time to do practice. Even the 2 or 3 occasions I found for practicing were not as pleasing experiences earlier. I found it difficult to keep my attention in the walking process, and mind seems to be getting distracted by thoughts related to the current busy schedule. I have heard that mindfulness is not only about concentration and the one-pointed focus, so I try to observe what is going on in my distracted practice rather than abandoning it. When I start walking, I feel the sensations on my left and right foot, mainly the pressure on the soles and how it gets distributed among the front part and the toes. Also, I feel the cold and hot sensations on the sole. I can sense the differences in the left and right foot. However, after 3 or 4 rounds of focused attention, I find that mind gets on various thoughts and jumps out. But I don't get lost completely. And now I am thinking and I can still observe the walking process at a distance. It seems like my stationary point of observation has shifted to riding with the thoughts, and I am observing the walking process while having a roller coaster ride with the thoughts. I did not try to do anything drastic since I could observe the walking as well. Sometimes the mind comes back to the walking process, abandoning the thoughts of office work, coronavirus in Sri Lanka, Donald Trump winning the election, etc., etc., and then drifts back to the thoughts again. The walking time of 45 minutes to 1 hour spent like this is like a pendulum. Can I assume, even though not settled and concentrated, my mindfulness is still there and the state of mind will come back to the pleasant times again if I keep on practicing? Much merits for your guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, it may come back to the normal previous state, but you can you can make it little earlier by practicing self-restraint or the restrainment of the faculties. So if we distract ourselves too much, so the thoughts coming to the mind is many. Say for example, you are engaged in internet for many hours, so you're watching the YouTube, watching various movies, writing a lot of emails, whatever it is. So you spend a lot of time in the internet. Or you are watching television for a long time. You are reading many newspapers and talking over the phone for many hours. Maybe even some distracting news, some disappointing news about coronavirus or whatever it is. And even maybe about Donald Trump, nothing to worry. So whatever it is, so if we too much engage with this kind of distractions, actually our meditation going to suffer. So that's why we have to have a fair amount of restrainment on how to use our faculties, how to use our eyes, how to use our ears, our nose, tongue, body and the mind. So if we safeguard it, if we safeguard them, then less harm has happened when we are going to the office. Say, while you are going to the office, you are trying to maintain mindfulness. While driving, you are trying to maintain mindfulness. While you are going on public transport, you are trying to maintain mindfulness. And because the point is, if you are not maintaining a fair amount of mindfulness, or if you are not safeguarding your faculties, the repercussions are to yourself. So once you come back home and try to practice, many thoughts are coming, many distractions, many prapancha, proliferation. So that is why, I mean, you yourself understand how harmful for me to spend many hours in various distractions, thinking too much of YouTube, thinking too much of internet, thinking too link, watching too much of movies or whatever it is. So then we ourselves will understand. So these are the consequences. We ourselves will understand, and then that is the time for us to limit those. Only the essential parts we look at, just to get updated, but then stop, maintain some limits, and then think about the meditation, think about our practice. So have some kind of a inclination towards our practice. So is it harmful to me? Whatever the activity that I am now engaged with, is it harmful to me? Whatever the activity that I am going to do, is it harmful for my practice? So there's a beautiful passage related to the Sati Sampajanya, clear comprehension. So it is mentioned that whenever we want to do something, to sort of assess it on 4 ways. The first one is Sattaka Sampajanya, where we want to check, is it really sort of useful? Is it really beneficial? Or is it not? So we do little assessment before we really get engaged with the activity. And if we found this first assessment that it is not that useful, then we can neglect the activity. But if we found it is quite necessary, essential to do, then we can continue. And while continuing with it, then we have to do it mindfully. Say for example, you are writing a paper, you are writing a kind of an article. So can we able to do that mindfully while engaged in that task? Suppose you are driving. So in that time, are we able to maintain the mindfulness without thinking and without too much listening to music, etc.? Are we able to do that task mindfully? Then actually we are contributing more towards our practice. Even during the day-to-day activities, we are using those activities to contribute towards the practice. So likewise, we have to skillful on using various day-to-day activities, daily activities to our practice. Otherwise, if we are unmindful and engaged with so various other activities, mostly the distracting activities, then our practice is going to be suffered. So therefore, try to check, are there any such unnecessary activities that I am get engaged? Am I carried away by today's too many news? Or am I get carried away too much about today's coronavirus information? So am I getting carried away by, say, a lot of movies, whatever it is? So we have to do kind of an honest analysis, honest assessment about our day-to-day activities, and accordingly we can adjust our daily practice, daily timetable, daily schedule. And as a result, you may be able to come back to the past level of your practice very sooner.
Question number 4 of 7. This one is on is general question. Dear Bhante, with practicing meditation and contemplation, the more I practice, the less I feel attached to the material life. I feel much happier with what I have. For example, it is easier to stick to budgets and use available resources. Sometimes I feel pressurized by my family and friends to get more things, like expensive clothing or a car. What advice do you have for managing these expectations? With metta, that's the end.
So you can ask your family members also to practice. So that is the best way of solving the problem. Because if you alone practice and they have no idea about this whole thing, so they think that you are now sort of out of the world, or you are now in a different world. But on the other hand, if both are practicing, if the husband and wife both are practicing, so then there is a fair chance that both are having the same line of thinking. But on the other hand, if the other party is not practicing and asking so many things, you can simply be sympathetic about the other party, not going to any quarrel or any argument. You can simply understand that you also was there. Now you have little change your behavior because of the practice, but you also was there. So I also was there. So we can be very humble, thinking with respect to others' view, rather than sort of looking at the faults with him or her. We can understand how they are thinking. They are thinking about the safety, they are thinking about the savings, deposits and whatever it is. And we can understand their mindset. So we can even respect that. So not because that we need it, but we simply sympathize their situation, and we can even do it like a duty, just to sort of make them happy. So in a sympathetic manner. So likewise, you can take various approaches to solve this problem. But anyway, you have to continue your practice, because that will give you a kind of a balanced attitude. So in our practice, time to time, different aspects are coming up or popping up. But that also vary. Now, say for example, today you are sort of having a kind of a renunciation type of attitude. But tomorrow it may be a little changed. Maybe you acknowledge, you accept that fair amount of, some amount of resources is necessary for the living. Another day you even like to donate what you have, the excess amount you can donate even. Another day you can look at how the others are sort of struggling towards these various sensual pleasures, accumulating a lot of things. So you can look at it in a more equanimous manner without having any agitation or any kind of a resentment. Likewise, our practice also changes and we become matured, and therefore you continue a practice and you can take various approaches to solve the problem.
Question number 5 or 7. This is a theory question. Dear Venerable Sir, what is the meaning of, and I don't think I pronounce it correctly, Patinisaggo?
Yeah.
I think that's much merits less yet.
Yeah, Patanisaggaanupassana is one of the vipassana practices. If you can remember Anapanasati Sutta, so I have in that 16 steps, the 16th step is Patanisaggaanupassi Asasi Samiti Sikkhati. So I can show you that, maybe give me a second. In Anapanasati, the 16 steps, so you can share screen. So in this Anapanasati Sutta, so if you can remember, so there are 16 steps, and the first 4 steps are Kayanupassana, the next 4 steps are Vedananupassana, next 4 steps Chittanupassana, and the last 4 steps are Dhammanupassana. So the last statement, so your question is related to that last. What is Patinisaggaanupassi? So basically, in order to understand this, so we have to come to a fair amount of practice. We should know some basics of our practice. Some amount of vipassana is necessary to understand what this really means. So I'll try to explain it in mundane terms. Say you are continuing your practice, and ultimately in one time, suppose you do fair amount of observations, as a result of wisdom is aroused, and as a result you are ready to give up things. So the nibbida, the giving up, disenchantment arise in the mind, and one day the mind become released. One day mind become sort of free. But again, mind attach, because as a habit, even though temporarily the mind is released, still you can't maintain it, because a lot of sensual desires are still available in the mind. Asava and anusaya are still present. Therefore, again mind go and grab, again mind go and grasp. So at that time, what you have to do? So Patinisaggaanupassi is where. So when suppose the mind go and attach with something, grasping something, so you have to let go of that. Patinisagga means, literally in Pali, what is Patinisagga means, you letting go, you simply relinquish. So you relinquish that attachment, you relinquish that grasping. And now where are you going to establish your mindfulness? So you establish back your mindfulness onto the emptiness, not with anything else. So you are not holding back to the body, or you are not holding back to the feelings, or you are not holding back with another thought. Rather, a thought has arisen, maybe a kind of a grasping has arisen, and you relinquish that and establish back yourself on emptiness. So this is called Patanisaggaanupassana, and where you are ready to let go of the present attachment and keep the mind again back with this unassociated state, non-attachment state. So this is what called Patanisaggaanupassi. So you can do it actually with respect to Anapanasati. I mean, you are building up yourself maybe using Anapanasati, or you are building up yourself using rising and falling, you are building up yourself using, say, dhatu manasikara, whatever it is. I mean, you can come to or you can reach to this stage using many different paths. But patinissaggaanupassana is a common technique, common vipassana approach possible at a, say, dhammaanupassana level. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 7. This one is a general question. This is the first time I've heard the technique of samatha practice and the vivid explanation of the experience of jhana. Usually, Nisanavaniya monastery practice is geared towards vipassana practice. Did Panthea practice samatha during the past? What are the advantages of exploring this practice in a lay person's spiritual path? That's the end.
Yeah, actually, before I come to Nisarnavanaya, I practice samatha meditation because I was in Nauyana monastery, where a lot of emphasis is given for samatha practice. So advantages are there, as I mentioned. So if one is able to attain jhana, so a lot of experience you can gain. Sometimes, I mean, people, when they don't have much experience, a little amount of concentration, they even misguided, thinking that this is jhana, this is first jhana, this is fourth jhana. Likewise, if they don't have fair amount of understanding, so they sometimes overestimate their experience. On the other hand, this kind of an absorption, sometimes even people can misrepresent or misinterpret, thinking like Maggapala. So this is entirely a wrong kind of a representation or kind of an understanding. So if you have a fair amount of understanding of samatha practice, so you have experienced concentration practices, samatha practices. You know what it is, and you yourself have some experiential knowledge. So it is very less possibilities there for you to get misled. But and when you have samatha experience, and once you get on to the vipassana practice, and there's a big difference there. So you can vividly see the difference. So say for example, I have explained about the first jhana going approaching using the anapanasati. But first jhana can be attained using many other methods, many other techniques as well. And once you know that, once you have experienced that, and when you practice anapanasati bound towards the vipassana, so there you will understand it is not the absorptions. It is not that you are trying to holding any object. You are not trying to get absorbed to the nimitta. Rather, you are coming back to the real terms. So now this nimitta is kind of a mind-made one. It is appearing because of the mind is concentrated. It's an outcome of the concentration. But in vipassana, we are using the real phenomena, not the mind-made phenomena, but the real phenomena. So real phenomena, very much like, say, vibrations, movements, say, touching sensations, cold, say, hot, hardness, softness. So all these kind of real phenomena, and on the other hand, the feelings, thoughts. So these are the real phenomena. And we are not going to change them, but we rather observe them. Very carefully we observe them, accepting them with their real terms. Say how they are coming and how they are arising, what are the causes for them to arise, and how they are disappearing. And likewise, we are trying to get a lot of wisdom aroused due to that kind of an observation. That's why it is called insight practice. And as a result, the whole thing is letting go of, whole thing is relinquished, and the mind become free. So now mind has nothing to grasp. Mind has never become oneness with anything. Now, in the samatha practice, so your mind become united or oneness with that object, with that counterpart sign. But in vipassana, It has let go of everything, not holding to anything in the world, not attached with anything in the world. So there's a big difference between samatha approach and the vipassana approach. So if you have some samatha practice, so it is you can understand the difference. You can vividly understand the difference how the mind is operating in these two domains. So, but when someone doesn't have any kind of such experience, even when you reach, say, the fourth stage of Anapanasati, so that is where in the Kayanupassana section, say one can come to Passambhayam Kaya Sankharam, where the whole body become calm, tranquil. Even that sometimes people can misrepresent or misinterpret like jhana. Even they can misinterpret it like even maggapala. Even like thinking that even as a kind of emptiness. But it is not. So emptiness is more deeper, where a fair amount of wisdom is available as a foundation. And as a result, mind has let go of all the attachments. So that is how the emptiness is available. And therefore, having some understanding about samatha practice is good. But on the other hand, attaching to the samatha practice, addicted to the samatha practice is the bad thing. That is the bad side of it. And again, it may take some time. So therefore, we in Nisarnane, we actually give more prominence towards the vipassana practice. Because in vipassana practice, you also have some good concentration. Vipassana concentration is also available. And with respect to vipassana concentration, you even feel samatha practice is not that advantageous, or not that not really advantageous, not that say lucrative, or not that prominent, because vipassana concentration is more and more vast, more opening is there, and more kind of reinforcement to the mind is available in vipassana practice. So therefore we give more emphasis towards vipassana, particularly in Nisarnane.
Question number 7 of 8. Dear Bhante, as a general question, dear Bhante, as per your Dhamma talk today, when you come to a blissful situation or first jhana in Anapanasati meditation, do we need to end some of the meditation in order to begin vipassana meditation? Or can we reach the next jhana by doing samatha continuously? Much better for your guidance. Everyone's
good. Yeah. So actually, one by one, different jhana can be attained. So we'll discuss one by one in this session. So today we discuss first. Maybe on next week we'll discuss the second jhana. So one has to actually practice first jhana for quite a long time, in order to be sort of familiarized with it, because accidentally going there is not enough. So you need to again and again attain to that jhana and have familiarized there, and then only you can get a fair understanding about what it is, what are these jhana factors really mean. So then maybe you can understand the disadvantages of the first jhana, then you can get into the second jhana by knowing the disadvantages. Say for example, when you know that the sort of again and again applying mind to the object and sustaining its attention again and again there, it's a little hindrance, kind of a trouble. If it is possible to just be there without any movement, without any sort of coming and going, just absorbed, so then it is well and good. Likewise, one understand the disadvantages of first jhana, and as a result one let go of certain jhana factors, certain qualities available in the first jhana, and then attain the second jhana. And you have to practice that again for quite a long time, and then you will understand what are the disadvantages of second jhana, then you can attain the third jhana. So likewise, there's a kind of a progressive attainment is possible, and that is the proper approach when one is practicing jhana. And on the other hand, if one wants to come back to vipassana, you have to let go of jhana, you have to emerge from jhana, then only you can practice vipassana. You can't practice vipassana while being in the jhana. You have to emerge from jhana and then you can practice vipassana.
Question number 8 of 9. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, according to the Buddha's teachings, the last state of our mind before death, Chuti Siddha, decides our next birth. So is this merely Chuti Siddha or karma influence, the existence of your next birth or both of them?
So I mean, I didn't check that yet, so but a lot of information is available here and there, but point is that if we take these things too seriously, it is difficult to practice. So rather, many explanations are there. I mean, thinking about the karma, what we did throughout our life, what are the wholesome tasks that we did, what are the unwholesome things we did. So depending on that, there could be a karma nimitta appearing in the last moment, or what are the most frequently conducted tasks, even that can come as a nimitta during the last moment, or the people get involved while we are getting doing something, so that nimitta, that persons can come to the mind the last moment. Or maybe even the next life's information, kind of a detail, signs can come to the mind in the last moment. So many things are there. So actually we don't have much control over them at that last moment. So what we have control is before that. So don't wait till the last moment for you to decide what you need to do. But rather start today. Develop the mind today, sort of not allowing the mind to decide that. So you reinforce the mind, you develop the mind, you strengthen the mind with necessary qualities, and to remove or subside various unnecessary qualities, harmful qualities in the mind. So that is what the whole practice is about. So when you understand there are various bad habits in my mind, various drawbacks available in my mind, lot of hindrances are available in the mind, then we have to work hard to eliminate them, to discard them. And on the other hand, when I understand that I don't have much faith in my mind, I don't have much effort in my mind, I don't have much mindfulness available in my mind is not yet concentrated, not enough wisdom is not available in my mind, so then try hard to develop them. So that's the whole thing about the mind, about the practice. To discard the unnecessary harmful qualities and to reinforce and to culminate, to develop the necessary positive qualities. So we can't do it while we are at the deathbed. So that's why we have to try our best when the fair amount of physical strength is available while we are healthy. So when you are in deep sickness, then you can't actually practice. Rather, try your best, invest some time to the development of the mind before you get into any trouble. Then when you really get into some trouble, you are already in some position. You are somewhat spiritually advanced, somewhat spiritually matured to endure that situation. So therefore, all these subtle information, I mean, you, even though you know, it is with less benefit. Rather, if you understand how to develop the mind and how to discard the bad qualities, harmful qualities, that is much, much useful. Yeah.
Bhante, we've gone over time a little bit. Do we have time for one more question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, this is the last one. Question number 9, general question. Dear Bhante, can we practice Vipassana meditation alone by skipping Samatha meditation, or do we need to practice Samatha and Vipassana respectively? That's the end.
Yeah, different approaches are there. So that is why in meditation there are different approaches mentioned. Say one can practice Samatha first and then convert to Vipassana. So that is one approach. One can directly practice Vipassana from the beginning and then, if like, can practice Samatha as well. And as you mentioned, there's a possibility of taking both in parallel. You do some amount of Samatha and you do some amount of Vipassana. That is another approach. And there's another method mentioned kind of looking at the mind and something, I can't exactly remember the name of that. So likewise, mainly samatha and vipassana, with respect to samatha and vipassana, three approaches are mentioned. So in order to practice vipassana, it is not essential to go to the level of absorptions, to the level of jhana. So that is something that sometimes people give too much emphasis and telling that jhana is a must for you to get into vipassana. It is not so. Rather, while even doing vipassana meditation, your fair amount of concentration is developed. And again, one of the most important fact that Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw has highlighted is that you can get into vipassana even at the level of upachara samadhi, neighborhood concentration. You don't need to essentially go to the jhana level, absorptions level, in order to get into the vipassana. So you can even turn towards that while at the level when the mind is in a fair amount of concentration, not yet to the absorption. Very much like I can give you a kind of a approximation here in Anapanasati. So we discussed about 16 steps. The first four steps are called the Kayanupassana. So among those four steps, let me share that again. Among those four steps, the first four steps are Kayanupassana. So among those four steps, the last step, Passambhayam Kaya Sankharam, that state is where the mind has some fairly concentrated, but it is not jhana. But fair amount of concentration is there, and you can't now distinguish whether it is in-breath or out-breath, but kind of a sign is there, kind of a perception is there about the breath, kind of a sensation is available. And even at this level, you can turn towards the vipassana. Now you are understanding how this sensation behave. How is it appearing? How is it disappearing? What are the causes of this sensation? Likewise, you can turn towards the vipassana. So, but the first few stages are very much like building up the concentration. So it is not much yet to the vipassana, but you are still pumping fair amount of wisdom even towards from these four stages, earlier stages, because you are giving some emphasis towards the looking at the minute details of the breath. That is where the clear comprehension is improved, and that is the seed of the wisdom. So slowly now your mind is bent towards the vipassana. So therefore, jhana may be a sort of a good experience, but not a must for vipassana. Okay, I think we came to the last question. Hope everything finished.
Yes, it's finished.
Yeah. Okay.
So that was the last question. So with that, we'd like to wrap up the session for today. Thank you for joining. We'd like to pass the merits to Bhante for giving up valuable time for this program. And also thank you, Bhante. Actually, the discussion was quite interesting today because I don't even know a lot about some of the practice. This is probably the first I really heard anything about it, because it isn't mentioned.
So don't think too much about it.
It's never mentioned. So yeah, it was quite interesting, actually. There's a lot of good questions that came out of it, so I think that'll be helpful for people if they don't know about it. So with that, I'd like to thank the organisers and all the people seen and unseen helping this program, along with the most important people, which is yourself, for joining. So with that, I'd like to end the program. Thank you for joining Theruvan Sannai.
Theruvan Sannai. May you attain path, fruition, nibbana. Sukhi hotu.